Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on a Thursday. Always glad to get to your phone calls and your emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. Mitchell Silk joins me now, who served as Assistant Secretary for International Markets at Treasury during the first term of President Trump, the author of A Seat at the Table. Mr. Silk, welcome.
Hey, Lars. Thank you so much for having me. Great to be here.
I'm glad to have you on. I'll admit right up front, I don't like the idea of government bailouts. I do like the idea, as painful as it might be, of having the market sort things out. But should we consider one when it comes to, say, soybean farmers in America who are now looking at a possible bailout of $10 to $14 billion in taxpayer money because record harvest, that brings prices down. That means prices are down. Exports lost, and they used to sell a lot of this stuff to the Chinese communists, and now they're not as much anymore. Does that mean the U.S. government and the taxpayers should make that up?
It's a great challenge that that confronts us and the American people, and particularly our farmers, Lars. And we've got a really big challenge. The president and the trade negotiation team has a really big challenge, as seen through the trying to confront the predatory practices of China in the areas of trade, tech, and finance. And I could reel back to Trump 45, 2018, 19, and early 20, when we were negotiating with the Chinese. They tried every game in the playbook, last minute document swaps, protocol games, and as relevant to the soybean issue, targeted pain, where they came after us, our farmers, our manufacturers, and tried to use similar plays back then. We stood with resolve. We didn't melt to the targeted pain that they tried to impose. Back then, the ag issues were poultry, shrimp, peaches, blueberries, cherries. It sounds relatively minimal, but the numbers in the aggregate are roughly the same. And with the resolve and a very solid offensive playbook, we were able to bring back $80 billion, I'm sorry, in commitments to purchase our agricultural goods as a part of the phase one trade deal. So here we're dealing with a slightly different set of pressure points. Over the past couple of weeks, China has really taken some rather coercive economic actions, not limited to soybeans, but you'll be aware that there was an economic export control action that the Chinese took just a couple of days ago in an attempt to restrict not just the U.S. markets, but the global markets from critical minerals that are rare earths that are so important to the global supply chains. And again, Lars, this is not an issue just confronting the U.S. and the U.S. markets, but it's really the global supply chains. And the two main tactics and strategies that the president and our team deployed was resolve with a good, solid, and firm strategy that we didn't budge and move off of or be phased by any of these tactics of the Chinese. And at the same time, on these broader issues, like soybeans, like rare earths, we formed coalitions with our friendly folks across Europe and in Asia to push back, and we were able to push back. There, the issues were slightly different with telecoms companies, ZTE and Huawei, and here it's playing out in rare earths and soybeans.
Well, let me ask you about soybeans, because I'll admit I can barely balance my checkbook, but if there's a worldwide market in soybeans and the Chinese say, well, we're going to slap this heavy-duty tariff, 34% on U.S. soybeans, so effectively U.S. soybeans won't sell there, but that means the Chinese must be buying them somewhere else if it's a commodity they need. It's not like you buy soybeans for fun. You buy them because they're part of your food, part of what feeds your country. If they're buying them elsewhere, then that means that the people who would otherwise be buying, in other words, it's like oil. You know, people say, well, you oil's a worldwide commodity, right? I mean, the price goes up and down. If one country says, we're not going to buy your oil anymore, then you sell your oil to somebody else because they still have to buy the oil somewhere, which creates another opening. Why don't soybeans just slide to that other market? Or am I seeing this too simplistically?
No, you're seeing it exactly correct, and I think you're highlighting a really important broader point. So let's start at the very top. You're correctly pointing out that soybeans and oil and gas are fungible commodities, right? And the demand numbers and the supply numbers are extraordinarily large. Globally, the demand numbers are and supply numbers are extraordinarily large, but in China, demand for soybeans is big. Demand for oil is big. Demand for LNG is big. And what we saw during Trump 45 is that through the command and control economy, literally one phone call from the top, the premier, to one export-import company or leaders in that field can pivot from U.S. commodities to, in this case, Brazilian and Argentine commodities in one fell swoop. And let's focus on the numbers for just a moment. So our soybean production has been roughly at a same level from over the past couple of years, from 22 to 25. It's roughly around 113, 115 to 118 million metric tons a year. Now, to put matters in context, China has the capacity to take the largest slice of our production, roughly about 60%. They have a demand consumption of just over 75 million metric tons a year. And if we're to look back at pace, they've roughly taken about 50% of our production every year. And clearly what's happened this year is that Xi Jinping has weaponized soybean purchasing, because the 50%, it's not just the tariff issue that you point out. The senior most level leadership in China has instructed the government-owned and government-controlled agricultural purchasing companies, the agricultural export and import companies, not to take one single contract from our great soybean producers.
Wow.
And what he's done, now it was rather subtle in Trump 45 on, let's say, the energy side, where he shifted a little bit here and a little bit there. He gave us a little bit. He took some away from the Middle East. Here he's playing larger games with Russian oil. But this soybean action was clearly designated and meant to send a strong signal to President Trump that President Xi is taking a very firm action. And what he's gotten in response to that was our president, President Trump, taking a further action to up the ante on the leverage to impose a 100% tariff on Chinese goods. Now, that's paused for the moment, but this is really a leverage game. But I think the broader point to highlight, Lars, is how China can so easily, through their command and control economy mechanisms, weaponize even products like soybeans to the great detriment of not just the United States and our great farmers, but also to the global markets. And we see the global market impact and the global supply chain impact again through this predatory conduct in the arena of critical minerals.
I'm talking to Mitchell Silk, who served as Assistant Secretary for International Markets at Treasury. So let me ask you a very simple question. We've got about a minute left, Ms. Silk. So if they say we're not buying 75 million metric tons from America, we'll buy them from Brazil, then whoever Brazil was selling their soybeans to now needs soybeans. Why aren't American farmers able to just say, fine, we're not going to sell them to China, we'll sell them to Brazil's old customers?
Yeah, so Brazil is a producer. There is capacity. The largest slice of those Brazilian exports after China would go to the EU.
Yeah.
EU has a pretty hefty demand of just under 30 million metric tons. The problem with our guys, our farmers selling to the EU, is that the EU has very strident GMO requirements, and most of our soybeans don't meet those requirements. And so,
unbelievable. That is Mitchell Silk. He served at Treasury during the first term of President Trump. He is the author of A Seat at the Table. Mr. Silk, it is a pleasure to have you on. Back in a moment, we'll talk about a new plumbing law in the Big Apple.